to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Oksana Smerdychuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. This week, we're offering you the latest news from Ukraine and some music, and a discussion that our colleague Bohdan Mihailo had with Alex Fishberg, a US lawyer based in Kyiv, author and observer of the Ukrainian scene. Why did he return to Ukraine? What has he experienced and recorded? And how does he see the present situation? Alex has got plenty of insights to share with you. But first, a roundup of the news. This week, the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople, the spiritual leader of 300 million Orthodox Christians, took an important step in recognizing the independence of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The Synod took a decision to proceed with granting of the Thomas of Autocephaly to the Church of Ukraine. Also, a decision was passed to annul the documents of 1686, which put the Ukrainian Orthodox Church under the control of the Russian Orthodox Church. This decision has met with harsh criticism from the Russian Orthodox Church and with threats to break off relations with the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople. The Synod has appealed to all sides to avoid appropriation of church property as well as any acts of violence or retaliation. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe has postponed the vote on changing the sanctions mechanism for Russia, which means that Moscow will now stay out of the Parliamentary Assembly until at least January next year. More than 4 years ago, in April 2014, Russia was stripped of its right to vote in the Parliamentary Assembly because of its annexation of Crimea, as well as its actions instigating war in eastern Ukraine. Since 2017, Russia has stopped paying its contributions to the Parliamentary Assembly, which is about 7% of the Council's total. The country has, however, repeatedly lobbied for its full return to the organization. Ukrainian political prisoner Oleg Sentsov, who is currently imprisoned in Russia on fabricated terrorism charges, has confirmed that he is ending his hunger strike. In a letter, he stated that, "In connection with the critical state of my health, as well as complications with my internal organs starting to set in, I am scheduled to be force-fed in the near future. Allegedly, I am no longer able to adequately assess my level of health and the dangers threatening it." Sentsov has been on hunger strike since May the 14th, demanding the release of all Ukrainian political prisoners in Russia. In the letter, he also apologized for the fact that he did not achieve his goal. Ukraine should have its first domestic low-cost carrier flying domestic routes by the end of the year, said the Minister for Infrastructure, Volodymyr Omelyan. A new airline, called SkyUp, will be starting operations and will receive regular routes. Ukraine is also putting a number of contracts to manage airports up for bid. Since 2016, passenger numbers in Ukraine have been growing at around 30% a year, and Kyiv wants to quadruple the number of airports in the country over the next 12 years as part of a $60 billion infrastructure drive. Some 12,000 people were evacuated after a fire and a series of explosions at an arms depot containing thousands of tons of ammunition near the town of Ichnya, more than 170 kilometers from Kyiv. It was the sixth major fire in 3 years at an arms depot of the Ukrainian army, which has been fighting pro-Russian separatists in the east of the country since 2014. Ukrainian authorities described that incident as an act of sabotage. Ukraine began a series of large-scale air force exercises with the United States and other NATO countries. The Clear Sky 2018 exercises, which will run until October 19th, are being held in western Ukraine. Some 700 troops are taking part, half of them from NATO member countries, including the United States, Britain, the Netherlands, Poland, and Romania. US aircraft and drones will train with about 30 Ukrainian aircraft. Polish and Romanian aircraft will fly in to work with their Ukrainian counterparts in what will be the first time that they work together to protect this airspace, according to Ukraine Air Force spokesman Yuri Ignat. And the Minister of Economic Development and Trade of Ukraine, Stepan Kubiev, has reported that Ukraine's GDP has now been growing for 10 quarters in a row, showing that the economy has overcome the crisis that was due to Russia's aggression and annexation of Crimea in 2014. The forecast remains positive that by the end of the year, GDP growth should be over 3%.
Well, I'm delighted to have as our guest on Ukraine Calling's in-depth discussion this week, Alex Frischberg. He's a well-known U.S. lawyer practicing in Kyiv for many years, the author of several books and numerous articles, a person well acquainted not only with the legal and business and political scenes in Ukraine, but also the social, and I would even say moral environment, especially in Kyiv and the larger cities. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Alex, I see from your very impressive credentials, you're an American lawyer, but born in Kyiv.
Indeed, yes.
To a Jewish family that emigrated to the USA during the Soviet period.
There's many of us Russian Jews living in America.
Right. But you are not typical in the sense of a lawyer that's so fully immersed in his work and making money. You've actually spent a lot of time writing, thinking about things. And one of your first major works, aside from your legal practice, was a two-volume work retelling the trials and tribulations connected with emigration to a new land. I've looked at it today and will obviously read it. It's in Russian. You deal with the pressures, alienation, loss, challenges of adaption and making a new start. And interestingly, through the correspondence of your family members over a 20-year period. Would you tell us a little bit more about this two-volume work?
Absolutely. When we immigrated from Ukraine to America, to St. Louis, Missouri, my parents promised to their best friends that they would write every 2 weeks for the entire duration of our immigration, which is exactly what they did. And when I returned back to Kyiv in 91, these friends gave me back my parents' letters and mine letters, too. And they kept them in chronological order, all of them. So I had them all keyed in and edited out for small things, but large, and then I inserted photographs, black and white photographs from our immigration throughout the entire two-volume set. So you see what we went through and what everybody went through. It describes the Soviet times, what it was like to live in Ukraine, why we left, why all the Jews left because of Soviet Union, and what we experienced during our course of immigration, not just through 6 months in Italy, but also what it was like to come to America and start from scratch and become medical doctors. My parents were both psychiatrists, so they passed all the exams, and they practiced medicine in America until my father passed away.
Fascinating story, and I do recommend this to our listeners, those who at least read Russian. But look, you made it in the New World. You became a successful lawyer. You joined one of the largest practices in Washington. And then suddenly in 91, you come back here. Why that decision to return to a land that your parents had left?
My parents actually said, you know, Alex, are you crazy to go back to the country that we left specifically for you? And I wanted to come back for several reasons. One of them was, this is the land of opportunity. I came back in October of 91, so I was basically the only English-speaking lawyer, foreigner, for the entire country of Ukraine. For the next 3 or 4 years, I had a monopoly in all foreign businesses. They couldn't go anywhere other than me. So it was a beautiful, opportunistic move. But secondly, I'm from here. I'm from Kyiv. I speak the language. I love the country. I love the city. So it was coming home. It was a nostalgia that brought me back. And for those two things, I'm willing to give up Washington, D.C. and my lucrative career.
But you left during the Soviet period as a boy. You came back to an independent Ukraine, a Ukraine that was just refinding itself. Was it a huge difference, or was it more of the same with different flags?
It was completely different, because when I arrived here, the coup, the August coup, was a couple months right before us, and the country didn't know where it was going. There was galloping inflation, not hyperinflation, but galloping inflation. All the stores were bare of matches and lighters and sugar and salt. It was a very uncertain time, which for me made it a very exciting time.
And within a few years, you'd written a very interesting book called The Steel Barons. It actually appeared in 2008, but it deals with your with what you saw going on around you in those heady days of the 90s, yes, of Everything Goes. And in it, I see you expose the realities of the business and criminal worlds which overlap in Ukraine. And obviously, I'm tempted to ask you, how much of it is based on your own experience, or is it even autobiographical? You have a foreigner here, an American, as the main character. Or how much of it is simply put together from your observations?
Well, when I came here first, I would keep journal, notes of the things that would shock me and shock my conscience, of things I haven't seen before. And that is the journal on which this book is based. The book, The Steel Barons, is about how to become a billionaire in 9 months, in less than 1 year. It's all based on true stories. I just removed all the real names and put in fictional names so that I won't get killed. And so far, that kind of worked out well. But otherwise, everything there is pretty much true.
You're a survivor, but okay, I suppose I'm jumping ahead and I should go more chronologically, but have things changed dramatically, or is it still a question of more of the same here?
Oh, things here have changed dramatically. The book, The Steel Barons, was written in the 90s, early 90s. So then you had bandits here, you had the Savlokov brigades, you had all kinds of people who would, you know, offer protection at the end of the month. And fortunately, at that time, President Kuchma cleaned it all out. There's no more racket, there's no more, you know, daily bandits and businesses on the streets, how it used to be. So situation is day and night. It's like being in Chicago 1920s versus America 2018.
Well, that's a different note you're striking, because most people say, oh, this corruption and the, you know, everything that's been going on behind the scenes, it's been there forever and nothing has, it's got worse. And you're telling me that, in fact, from your perceptions and also as a lawyer, it has improved markedly.
No, I don't think so. It improved at all. Corruption has become more systematic, I would say. So that is actually a lot worse. But bandits don't exist. There's no more thugs. There's no more banditism on that level, at least. So that has improved.
Similar experience to that of Belarus, where Lukashenko came to power ostensibly on that ticket to crack down on the banditism, and he used quite ruthless methods. I'm sure such methods behind the scenes were used here.
Absolutely. I mean, Kuchma went to them and they said to all the families that either you stop your strong-arming activities and keep all the money and remain in Ukraine, or leave the country, because we're moving this, you know, economy from this Sicilian path to a normal European path. And though the, you know, bandits either remained here and were largely killed off, or they moved abroad and settled in Los Angeles and Israel, somewhere else where it's safe.
Right, so moving on to yet another very enticing title, A Foreigner's Guide to Ukrainian Women and Other Stories. Now, I was struck by the fact that I thought it would just be about your observations on, you know, how foreigners meet Ukrainian women here and the sex trade that's been booming even more so in recent years. But then I find that you've got a story there about the Maidan, you've got, which is highly analytical and stimulating. You've got one about guys who want to sail back from Australia across the ocean, a kind of Kon-Tiki type of experience. The imagination and the time factors involved. Writing must be a labor of love for you.
Oh, absolutely. All the stories that I write, even in this latest book, Foreigner's Guide to Ukrainian Women and Other Stories, it's basically all true stories that were told to me by somebody or other, or that I saw myself, and I just blow them up into fiction. So to me, it's just something that I've seen here that I want to share with everybody else, because a lot of people might not know much about Ukraine.
Yes, there's plenty of, you know, best practices, issues and mistakes to avoid, and certainly a very good guide to any foreigner that's coming here and wants to fall in love, or at least, shall we say, spend some time with a Ukrainian woman. Thank you for doing that, because though everybody talks about these subjects, there's very little literature on this, and certainly with that, the insight that you provide, and the wit and the humor.
Oh, thank you very much. But they're all based on true stories, so there's not much imagination that I had to put in.
Would you say, okay, this is a provocative question, that the women in Ukraine because of the social economic conditions, the conditioning from the Soviet period, that they differ much from Western European women or American women?
Oh, very much. It's a sharp contrast, especially for Americans, you know, and I'm one of them. When you come here, women here are very feminine. They're beautiful. They are here to kind of compliment a man. And this very much 1950s mentality, with a lot of them would prefer to stay at home and cook and have children and have a clean house for the husband. All those things that America had in 1950s. In American sharp contrast, women have become largely like men. They walk like men, they talk like men, the equality has to be like men. So all of a sudden, through the years from the Gloria Steinem movement onward, they've lost that charm and femininity that American men sometimes don't notice because they went through it rather slowly from 70s onwards. But as soon as you come to Ukraine, you see the difference. It's day and night.
Yes, certainly we do. And this observation of yours is made by Swedes and Norwegians and the northern type, shall we say, where women have got, with not sounding derogatory to you, used to wearing the trousers.
Yeah, even Beatles noticed that Ukrainian girls, they leave the world behind.
Yes. Okay, the last story in that collection, Foreigner's Guide to Ukrainian Women and Other Stories, is a curious one. It's about reflections and observations about the Maidan Revolution and that experiences, but it has something of an unexpected end, and there's a moral in that story too, as well as the observations. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I spent the year being a nighttime photographer in Maidan, so I would go out every second Friday of the month from midnight until about 8-9 in the morning, in taking pictures. So I talked to everybody who was there and fighting and seeing what's going on, and it was interesting to see why it happened, what actually happened, and then aftermath, what was the consequences of what went on. And that is exactly what I describe in the story called Maidan Revolution, which is the last of the four stories in the book called Foreigner's Guide to Ukrainian Women. And I guess the final point is that after the Maidan and the death of the 100 people and the sacrifice in ongoing war with Russia as an aggressor, nothing has really changed. The Maidan Second Revolution didn't really produce any beneficial results that can be measured. And with each revolution, things only get worse.
That's a pessimistic note. Well, we have elections coming up. Of course, no great expectations because things haven't changed dramatically. But hopefully new faces will appear in the next years, if not immediately, right? But I'll ask you about that towards the end. Now, look, just doing business in Ukraine 2018, you've got a very impressive company that you, firm, I should say, that you represent, Frischberg and partners here are very well known in Kyiv. And you produce a very, very useful handbook, guide, source for all those interested in doing business, investing in particularly in this country. You provide the legal framework. I've just seen the 2018 edition, but I note from what you've brought here that there are even more substantial earlier ones.
Indeed.
And the legal framework. Now, as a lawyer, has the legal framework, with all the talk of legal reform in recent years, especially after the Revolution of Dignity, has it actually changed for the better, or is it just a kind of rearrangement, you know, smoke and mirrors effect?
Nothing much substantive has changed, to be honest, except the simplification of the registration system. So it's become more streamlined, and that has become a lot easier. Things are going on electronically now. You can register, so that is removing some of the corruption. But largely, not much has happened in terms of reforms. I mean, the country, to become even Poland, as it was in the early 90s, has to go through fiscal reform, financial reform, has to go through administrative reform, like firing 60-70% of the state employees. It has to go through so many different types of reforms that it is simply impossible under the circumstances. So unfortunately, no, not much has changed, nor can I see much changing in the near future.
Well, what do you see that's positive? I mean, there was a lot of talk 3 or 4 years ago about civil society becoming resurgent. Now it's more fragmented and more jaded, I suppose, or frustrated. Do you see any positive currents, any positive trends that could lead to a brighter future, let's put it euphemistically?
I don't think anything, you cannot see anything positive or negative until the next president becomes a leader of Ukraine, which will be on 31st of March, not too long away from now. So you will see who will be the president and what the direction of the country will be. Until now, it's a status quo. It's a swamp. There's nothing that's moving because we don't know the future and there's no direction that can be taken at this stage.
And it's very hard to know what might emerge from the swamp.
Exactly. I predict this country is going to remain a swamp for foreign investors until a year and a half from now. The reason, because on 31st of March, there'll be first presidential runoff, then there'll be second presidential runoff. Whoever will be the president will take time to fire all the old bad people in the government and put in the new bad people in the government. And that'll take some time. Then, when the time clears, it'll be next August, you will have Ukrainian parliament elections in the fall, and you don't know who's going to be coming into those, which groups and which wings. And then it'll be next Christmas time. No business gets started in Christmas time. Everybody wants to have a good time. So the following February is when business might start turning up in Ukraine. An economy might start moving forward, and politics as well, depending on who will be the president. But timing is such that for another year and a half, Ukraine is going to be in status quo position.
And then we have local elections coming up after the reforms that have at least been announced and are being implemented to some degree, aren't they?
Yep.
So
we wait again.
Not very encouraging. You know, it's more lost time.
Exactly.
So, okay, now beginning to conclude, I suppose. Looking back on these, 27 years? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, I can't believe that I'm that old. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Everybody in Ukraine now is taking a front seat to history because what's happening here, 1 year is 10 or 20 years anywhere else in the world. Time here flies and is condensed much, much faster. So we're all very lucky to witness what we're witnessing from a historical viewpoint. But what we're witnessing is not that great. We have corruption, systematic corruption. We have war with Russia, which is draining the resources. We have the Ukrainian young youth leaving Ukraine to emigrate abroad because they don't see much future here. So the depletion of population. Smart ones are leaving. So what
and
is
skilled labor.
Exactly. So what is really good that's happened in Ukraine in the last 27 years? I would argue that every year life became harder and harder.
But have you seen at least the crystallization of a political nation, of getting away from the ethnographic basis into one where, well, we have a Jewish prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
We have high-ranking officials with not simply purely Ukrainian, whatever that means, background. We have probably on the surface, a much more tolerant society, a more inclusive one than 27, 30 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with this completely, because all the people understand that they're in really deep trouble, so everybody's sticking together to one another. For that reason, you have the cohesive society.
And yet that was the problem in 91, the referendum. Why did people vote for independence? Because they felt it would be better than a system that was bankrupt and sinking.
Absolutely. And if you look at it, from the sidelines, you'll see that Ukrainian is a very tolerant people, a very tolerant community. Even when the laws don't really work or cannot be enforced, the society still moves forwards. There's no conflicts here amongst the people themselves. People get along.
Okay. Before we ask you for your final thoughts, the caliber and the quality of the foreigners coming to Ukraine, I presume, in the early days when there was maybe a kind of Klondike-ish mentality. People were here for smash and grab or to make money quickly. The people that come here and stay, are they more serious? Are they more, better prepared? Are they more open?
Well, I would first make an observation that very, very few women come and stay here. Mostly it's the men who come to stay in Ukraine. It's not a tourist destination. And the men that come to stay here divide themselves into two categories. Those who come here by business or diplomats and come with families, or those who come here by themselves. And those who come by themselves, actually, like anywhere, they search for adventures. And a lot of them are very skilled people. They can afford to live here because they're IT guys. They can work out of anywhere. That's a big component of people here. They're young, and some people just come here because they're 55 years old and don't want to live wherever they live anymore and in Stockholm because it's cold and boring, and they buy an apartment here and they start dating girls. There's that component of the male society too, but very, very few women come here. It's mostly guys.
That's a very interesting observation. Thank you for it. Okay, so finally, parting thoughts. What would you like to say to our audience? Diaspora, diplomats, business community, those speaking in English around the world.
I would say that you should come and visit Kyiv yourself, because nothing can be easily expressed. Everything is the opposite of what it seems. In fact, it is a very friendly country with very friendly people. It's surprising there's no tourism here. But nothing is as bad as the people say. You should come and visit by yourselves for yourselves. And that's how most foreigners end up living here, because they cannot leave the place after they've seen it.
Alex Frischberg, U.S. lawyer practicing here for donkey's years, as we say in England, since 91. Someone who left Ukraine as a boy and then actually came back and has made it here and has made his mark on this country. I thank you very much for discussing these themes with me.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Some people believe in a creature called the chupacabra. And in Ukrainian, you'd say chubakabra. A band from Pavlohrad mentions them in a song called Molfare. Molfare are people who in Hutsul culture are believed to have magical abilities. So enjoy.
Я вижу, что в горшке.
So join us again next week for Ukraine Calling on Hromadske, where we'll bring you another topical in-depth interview, the news and some music. So tune in, and we would be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smerechuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.